Howdy, I'm Zoe, reader, writer, friend, and you're listening to Broken Spine Social Club, a literary podcast for readers of words. Each week, I sit down with one of my buds to chat about their favorite book. From high modernism to high fantasy, we cover it all, getting to the heart of what makes good writing great or okay writing high impact. So without further ado, welcome to Broken Spine Social Club. Your membership is approved. Howdy, and welcome back to another episode of Broken Spine Social Club, a literary podcast for readers of words. I am your host, Zoe Yan, and I'm extremely excited for our conversation today. I know, we cover everything here from high modernism to high fantasy, but in my deepest heart of hearts, I am a literary fiction person, and I couldn't be happier to be discussing my first kind of like proper lit fic novel with one of my good friends, Zaza Crame. Not only is Zaza literally one of the funniest people I know, she's also a phenomenal writer, and that gives her such a great insight into, well, talking about books. And the book that we're talking about today is her favorite novel, Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro. If you're a big reader, you might know Ishiguro's other books, Clara and the Sun, The Buried Giant, Never Let Me Go. And you might have also seen the film version of Remains of the Day starring Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson, which we talk about just a little bit. But either way, we had a great conversation. It was so much fun catching up with Zaza again. Not only have we studied and written together, we've also worked together. So we have a lovely long history that we kind of go into. And listen, I'm not going to hold you back from this conversation any longer. Let's just get right into it. I want to hear.
Yeah.
Where's the hot new place? Where are the kids in Dublin going out these days?
I'd say the spot I go the most is Hogan's. That's like the go-to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. Morris used to work at Hogan's. Did you know that?
No way. I can picture him there. Devitt's is good too, though. Obviously, some of the people around here, we all go there sometimes.
Yeah. A friend who was just on her honeymoon in Dublin. And I told her to like stay in Portobello, like it's the best place to be, easiest, most convenient, I think. And like her first night, she was texting me the whole time. It was so sweet. She was like sending me pictures of ZN spice bag, went to the Lordad. And the first night she was there, she was in Devitt's, and I was like, I used to work across the street from there.
Literally.
So welcome, my friend, Zaza Crame, to Broken Spine Social Club.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I thought that you would be an excellent candidate for coming on this podcast because you are not only a big reader, but you're an incredible fucking writer and screenwriter and friend. So there you go.
Maybe not in that order, but...
Not in that order, yes. Exactly. Yeah, you're a great friend first. You're a shit writer, though. So tell me about... Do you remember when we first met? This is what I always like to ask people. It's very self-indulgent.
Well, of course I remember when we first met because big day. I just moved to Ireland. Mm-hmm. Zoe had been there forever already. But for me, I just touched down and we had like our first class. You were like so confident in class. I'm hyping you up. It was like I was shy and like I don't know anyone and afraid. And then Zoe was like this confident like person. Stop. In the class, and I was like, wow, who's this lady? And now here we are, two and a half years later.
Has it only been 2.5 years?
Feels longer, doesn't it?
It feels a lot longer.
Yeah.
Feels
like those were some long years, but...
Those were some long years. Well, yeah. My first impression of you was, oh my God, there's this adorable girl in our course. She's so cute. And then you were like, oh, I was at USC. And I lived in LA and I was like, oh, that's cool because I feel like in Ireland, I don't meet really anyone who has any engagement with LA. And like, I mean, I have complicated feelings on LA, but my family's from LA. I was born in Santa Barbara. I've spent a lot of time out there. So I was like, oh, that's just nice that like someone kind of knows it. And then, we ended up having a kind of mutual acquaintance, which was really fucking weird.
Oh, yes, we did.
I don't even know if she named his name because I haven't talked to him.
If he would ever see this, he would be like, I've never seen this one girl.
He'd probably be like, I've never seen that other girl either. Who the fuck is she?
He's like, mutual. Don't know either of you.
Well, I should say that we have encountered a similar person. One of the boys I worked with at the bookstore in Omaha, Nebraska, ended up going to college with you at USC.
Yeah. And he was like such a good cinematographer. See, now he can't object because now we're complimenting
him. Yeah, exactly.
That I knew of him through that. And I think we might have met like once.
The only person who will listen to this podcast who has any idea who we're talking about is my friend Carl. No one else in my life will know who the fuck I'm talking about.
Besides the man himself when he
listens. Besides the man himself.
Inevitably.
Exactly.
Yeah. My laptop's like overheating now.
Oh shit. Tell me if you
need a
break.
It out. No, it's fine.
Okay, cool.
It's handled worse. Like Sims. I don't know.
Like Sims. There's something really real about women in Sims.
I know. It's like
that's all I have to say.
I just want to build a house and a family, but not in real life.
Do you use cheat codes? Or do you
like yes, but I don't cheat for money. I earn the money because that's what makes it like entertaining, you know?
Whoa, total disagreement. I think what makes it entertaining is building the house.
No, I start out like poor, dirt poor, and I work them up.
A rags to riches
hours
story?
And hours, yeah. Hours and hours of my life. Like.
You love a bootstrap story?
I do, exactly. Those are my values.
That's beautiful. That, yeah. I feel like getting very deep about Sims. For me, like, for you, it's like building them up, building a life. For me, it was building a house. But then I think the kind of mutual ground everyone can agree on with Sims, which is very philosophical, is like making them, number one, woohoo, or making them die.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, both
so
those
it's
things.
Like,
fabulous.
It's really god-like power to be able to like create life and then end it.
I would get guilt after I killed them.
That's healthy, probably. It's probably healthier than not. So I want to hear about you, Zaza Crame, as a reader. Tell me what do you read? Do you like to read? What have you always?
No.
Tell me, I figured not.
I can't read, actually. but no, I have always liked to read, and reading used to be a lot easier. I think we can all agree. Like when you were a kid and you just read like a book start to end in a sitting. And what happened to that? Like something like left my brain where I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I'd say the times I really can read are the weekends. That's like my best bet.
Yeah.
Like I love a weekend morning, cup of coffee, you know?
Heaven.
Little read in bed. On the weekdays, I try to have a little read before bed and I'm out.
Conk out.
Lights are out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. So, and what kinds of things do you normally gravitate towards? Fiction, nonfiction?
Fiction, like literary fiction mostly. But I do like the occasional murder mystery thrown in there. You know, why not?
Yeah. Ooh, spicy.
I know. What can I say?
I also like literary fiction. And I find, it's interesting. I actually don't know a lot of people who read a lot of literary fiction. Like, as I get older, I know mostly people who read, like, fantasy, which is grand, or, like, nonfiction. Like, I feel like so many people I know, like, read a lot of, like, memoir or self-help or, like, history.
Literary fiction gets a bad rep, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people think it's going to be boring. And it's so often not.
Exactly.
That's my deep thought on that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think with literary fiction, it's like you have to kind of approach it like you're not reading it. This sounds really artsy, but like it's a different experience to reading like a genre book. You're not reading to like get through a plot or kind of like see what happens next. Like there's something. It's like you're reading to like connect with like an emotion you might not have the words for. You love the language that's being used. It's like the formatting is like interesting and different to you. Like it's almost like a slightly different experience, I find.
Yeah, it's like going for like a long slow run and just like, you know, having to appreciate each little thing along the way as opposed to like trying to get to a destination, you know.
But literary fiction brings me very neatly, very swiftly into the book we're talking about today, which is Your Pick, Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro. Kazuo?
I don't know.
I'm
but
so
Ishiguro
fucked.
For sure.
Ishiguro for sure. Ishiguro for
yes.
Kazuo Ishiguro, Remains of the Day.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, hold up your copy.
Cover check.
Yours is gorge. Mine is old as fuck.
Mine's from, another Hodges Figgis.
Oh, love Hodges Figgis.
I know. Oh, there you go. Hodges Figgis. Yeah.
Love Hodges Figgis. Mine is from a thrift store in Fort Collins, Colorado called Bazaar Bazaar. And actually, Morris bought this summer, and then I read it directly after him before this project was but a twinkle in my eye.
What's Speaking of endeavors, you still need to follow my blog, by the way.
Have I not done that?
No. You heart reacted and then...
Shit. Oh my God, hold on.
It's good. I've only posted once, so you really haven't missed much whatsoever.
Will you tell the audience here what it's called so that...
Okay.
My many it's listeners called, can subscribe. Yeah. So it's my mom can subscribe.
Yeah, it's on Substack, and it's called Penny for Zaza's Thoughts.
I'd pay a quarter.
Oh my God. Wow. Quarter for Zaza's Thoughts. That's the next one.
Exactly.
My friend sent me a penny as a joke, or like Venmo me a penny when I posted.
That's adorable. So a penny for Zaza's Thoughts. I will be linking that.
Sounds good.
Because I love and support you.
It's just beginning, even though you are not a follower, but
yeah, I'm a fair weather follower.
Yeah, exactly. You're waiting till I like get some traction.
Yeah, then I'll be like, I always knew about that.
Yeah, oh my God, I always knew about it, but I was just waiting for
exactly. I was just waiting for everyone else to catch up. But to dive into your book, so
my book.
Your
mine,
book, yours. This is yours.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a little bit of background about this story. Very, very well-known, well-regarded novel. Its author, Kazuo Ishiguro, is a British-Japanese writer. He actually moved to England, to Surrey, when he was 5 years old, and he didn't return to Japan until he was 35. So I think that's always had like an interesting, he has said, like kind of impact on his writing. Like he very much so has like a Japanese consciousness to him, and it's the value system and family system he was raised in, but he is also very much so British. And from a British cultural background growing up, I suppose. He wrote two novels before this one. He's kind of always had a very literary consciousness. He graduated school and wanted to be a musician and a lyricist. And he has this really good quote that I'm gonna pull up now. See, this is why I need to print my shit off. Don't worry, I'll cut all this.
Keep it, keep the suspense.
Oh, that'd be really interesting for people.
Everyone will be on the edge of their seats.
What did he say? Look, the quote's like literally not even that great. He wanted to be a musician. Wanted to be a musician and a lyricist, but has said of giving up the career, quote, I'm much less glamorous. I'm one of these people with corduroy jackets with elbow patches. It was a real come down to realize that he was not a musician. He was just a writer.
A Nobel Prize winner.
but a mere Nobel Prize winner.
I hate that.
He wrote two books, both based in Japan, before he wrote Remains of the Day, which was kind of an instant literary hit. It won the Man Booker Prize that year. It has been made into a film with Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson. Have you seen the film?
I have not.
Oh, it's fire.
Is it? Because I like the book so much that I'm scared to see the film, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, I do understand that. I think I saw the film because Morris had read it and then he was like, I want to watch this movie.
He wanted to watch it, yeah.
Exactly. So we watched it. I understand your POV though. So I'm not going to pressure you.
I can picture the characters, you know.
Exactly.
It's going to be Anthony Hopkins then, just slammed in there. Just.
I will say that did do it for me. Like, unfortunately, Anthony Hopkins does now exist as Stevens, and so like the whole kind of like love plot. I'm like no offense to Anthony Hopkins, but like that guy looked old at like 15.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Because. I don't know why I'm picturing them as, like, pretty young, like, in the early part of the story, you know?
Yeah, but that would make sense, because I think he is he's old.
Because, like, 20 years have gone by, you know, or something.
Yes, yeah, it's been a long old time.
Long time, lots of yearning.
Have you read any? Yearning. Have you read any other of Ishiguro's books? You have?
Yes.
Sure. Which ones?
Good. Now I have to try to remember their names. Well, obviously I read Never Let Me Go. Mm. I've read... Clara and the Sun, and then there's one other I've read, The Buried Giant.
That is one that I haven't read, but while I was researching this, I was like, damn, I think I really want to read that.
It's very interesting. It's kind of harder, it's hard to get into because he really goes into like sort of medieval-y dialogue, which makes a person a little like, I felt a little like, oh, what is this at the beginning, but I I bought into it at a certain point, you know?
He is really, truly unparalleled with that, though. I've read Never Let Me Go. I read Claire in the Sun this summer as well. And that Claire in the Sun got that same, like, whole bet-in voice. The way he kind of inhabits that narration and the voice and the language and the style is like, whew, like, you know, you're in.
I know.
So to get into the book, I am going to give a very brief kind of overview, just talking about, I suppose, like, the background, as this podcast is about books. It's all spoilery. So people need
warning.
Put up or shut up. This story is a first-person narrative of a butler in England named Stevens. It's the 1950s-ish, I believe. He is the head butler for a grand old English estate, Darlington Hall. And he is currently serving as head butler to Mr. Faraday, who is an American who has recently bought the estate. But we learn that Stevens has primarily, throughout his career, served Lord Darlington of Darlington Hall. As it stands, Stevens is about to embark on a motoring holiday to go about this part of England, do some travel, see the sights to see, but mostly what he seems to be interested in is meeting up with his old friend, Miss Kenton, now Mrs. Ben, who was the housekeeper for, it sounds like fucking yonks, she was there.
Yeah, like 10 years or something, or
yeah,
five, like some, or yeah.
There's one point where she's mentioning, like, oh, some girls have been under my service here in this house for 6 years. And I was like, oh my God, she's been there a while. The majority of the book is set in the 1930s as Stephen's looking back. The societal lifestyle is really falling out of favor. It's disintegrating, this idea of having a staff of 25 and a single lord managing the estate. And so staff shortage problem, and his solution is to go find Miss Kenton, who appears to be having troubles in her marriage, and invite her back to work at Darlington Hall, where they will presumably live out the rest of their lives. Is that right?
I'd say so. Sounds about right.
Excellent. Excellent. So that's the book. But first, I want to know, when was the first time you read this?
Yes, it was like my sophomore year of college. And this happened to me all the time, where I'd ask my parents for a book that was easy to read and enjoyable. And they would give me some, like, really literary book. And I was not looking for that at the time. but that's what happened with this book, I remember. And I was like, oh my God, it's about a butler. And he's talking about, like, how to be a good butler. And so I think I was kind of bored at first.
It does take a while to get into. Morris warned me that the first time I read it, too. He was like, it takes a while. But kind of once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, I know. You're kind of like, let's get past him thinking about being a butler and let's hear more about Miss Kenton. But
yeah.
But let's see. I remember reading it like on a beanbag chair in my college dorm. Aww. So, and then I remember when I got to the end, I cried, and I don't think I'd really cried from a book like ever, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously that really stuck with me. I didn't cry this time, but I still felt sad.
I teared up. I think, I don't know if I full cried the first time I read it, but this time, again, it's just like, fuck, man.
I know. It's like, oh God, why?
Have you reread it before this?
No, I haven't. This is my first reread, so it's been, ooh, what, like 4 or 5 years? Yeah.
Oh my God, exciting. And what was that like, returning to it? As though you were a butler, looking back on your many years of service.
That was exactly what it was like. I felt like I kind of had forgotten sort of the political stuff.
Yeah.
And like in my brain was all kind of like the love stuff. And then there's a lot of like political stuff actually. So I don't know, that just like had gone out of my brain. So it was interesting to revisit that, because that is like sort of the other thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I still was affected by it. It had a lot to live up to since I had such strong memories of it, but I feel like it did, you know.
Good. Excellent. There is almost like a twofold story happening in this book. As Stevens is looking back on his life, he's looking back specifically on this like the post-World War I years, the late 20s through the 30s, and then who knows what the fuck's been happening through World War II. At that particular time in his life in Darlington Hall, a couple of really important things happen to him. Number one is that Miss Kenton comes to work at Darlington Hall, and there is a sort of will they, won't they love story that is presumably happening, which we'll talk about in a second. There is his father, who is 70, really should be retiring, has also come to work at Darlington Hall and passes away. And then there's all the political stuff with Lord Darlington, who we learn throughout the narrative is a Nazi sympathizer and has done his utmost to bring Nazism to Great Britain in the years before World War II.
Yeah.
And what I think is so beautiful about this book is this concept of like an, I'm almost quite hesitant to call it an unreliable narrator, because I feel like with a lot of unreliable narrators, you know, the Duns in Gone Girl is an example. The one I always think of is Dracula. Like, I think like there are a couple of like throwaway lines where you realize that they're all hopped up on like coke or something in that book. It's insane.
Interesting. Yes, I've not read it.
That's a crazy book. Throughout the whole book, Remains of the Day, you're getting this kind of like shifting story. It's all first person. You have kind of sections where Stevens is in the present day for the story, motoring about, kind of, you know, present tense, so to speak. And then there are passages where he's looking back on events that have occurred in his lifetime. And they never quite match up, or we end up getting way more information later.
He's just lying to himself, kind of, you know, like,
I think
he's trying to convince himself of some things, for sure.
That's exactly it. And he's like, he's back, he's now in his 70s when he's looking back on this. So it's almost like, you know, it's not even just like, oh, a situation happened. It's like the entirety of my life, he seems to be trying to like reconcile and figure out. The way Ishiguro too like reveals that something's happening is fascinating, because Stevens as a narrator will never admit it. The emotion isn't quite there. It's all these kind of like, the way he speaks, his voice is very high ideals about dignity or the role of a butler or his duties or his profession. And then all of a sudden you'll get some like dialogue where he's interacting with other characters, and a character will say something like, are you quite okay there, Stevens? Like, you appear to be crying.
That was a great moment.
When his dad died.
And he's just like still at work.
Bopping around at this great conference. So again, to set the scene, Stevens' father is also a butler in his 70s. He has found himself without a job. So Stevens has said, why don't you come work here at Darlington Hall? And again, it's clear to, I think, everyone but Stevens that the father is not equipped to have a position like this anymore. Eventually, he suffers a series of kind of strokes and is about to pass away at the same time that there is a massive dinner conference happening downstairs that Stevens obviously has to be kind of in charge of, because that's his job. But while his father is dying upstairs, Stevens is kind of running up and down these stairs, like, you know, seeing his dad for a few minutes, coming back down to his duty, seeing his father for a few minutes, coming back down to his duty. And then the dad passes away and Miss Kenton lets him know. And there's just like this one throwaway line where Miss Kenton's like, would you permit me to close his eyes? And it's like, oh, like,
I know.
It's just quite grim.
It's so grim. And like the scene where his dad's like, was I a good father or whatever? And he's like, we'll talk later.
Yes.
God, obviously, you know, the dad's going to die after that happens. You know,
you're you don't have that conversation unless. Like,
no. And you just want to like grab Stevens by the shoulders and just like, start shaking him, you know?
There are a few clues that we get to from Ishiguro about when you know that like the situation isn't quite what he, like, there's a lot of situations where he says he chuckles. Like, I gave a little laugh. I chuckled good-heartedly. And like that whole scene is like, haha, I'm so glad to see father's feeling better, I said, laughing. Was I a good father to you? I dare say I wasn't. Haha, I said, laughing slightly. I am so glad to see father is doing so much better. Like, he like cannot connect in that way.
No. And every time sort of in like the narration, he like denies something more and more. You know that, like...
Exactly. Like, he either denies it or he, like, justifies it. Like, there's this constant like, justifying, like, well, as you know, as I understand, as I say, like, it's, you know...
You're like, okay, sure.
This is what's interesting about this unreliable narrator piece with him, is it's never, like, he's straight up lying. It's that you just don't get the whole story. It's also the atmosphere of the book, too. Like, it's so repressive that, like, no one is saying what they mean. Like, there's an aspect where everybody is quite unreliable, actually, that nobody kind of knows their true feelings, whether that's Stevens or Miss Kenton or Lord Darlington.
Yeah.
Particularly what I'm thinking about is the letter. And he's gotten this letter from Miss Kenton. Yeah. And basically she's, you know, saying, oh, you know, Darlington Hall was so wonderful. You know, I've made a change in my life. I've actually just left my husband. I'm staying with an acquaintance. And oh, how wonderful Darlington Hall was those bygone years. And Stevens takes from this letter that she wants to return to Darlington Hall, i.e. him. And, quote, yeah. I should make clear, reread Miss Kenton's recent letter several times, and there is no possibility that I am merely imagining the presence of these hints on her part. Page 10. By page 180, he says, I may as well say here that having reread her letter again tonight, I'm inclined to believe I may well have read more into certain of her lines than perhaps was wise. Meaning, she at no point states, I want to come back to Darlington Hall.
No. And the whole time, he's like, I want to go see Miss Kenton so that I can get her back to work. Yeah. And we're all like, right, sure. And he just like really like hammers home that, you know.
Is he not such a man? Like,
I know
a complete inability to communicate, like, with a woman.
He is the worst communicator. Truly,
what I would say is to any women like below the age of 20, like, read this book. It'll save you a lot of fucking heartache. Like, learn.
Just don't bother.
Learn from the mistakes. Yeah. Don't wait until you're 33, an old maid, and you have to marry Mr. Ben and go to Dorset, essentially.
Yeah, and you have to marry just any guy. Yeah.
Cut that fuckboy loose, you know? Is what I'm saying, honey. You know?
Yeah, I know.
I have to focus on my career. Okay, sweet.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. But he loved her, too.
That's what's so fucking sad, is he did love her.
I know. I know.
Like, he just...
They could have had it
They could have had it all. Rolling in the deep. Rolling in the sweep.
I know.
Because they were servants.
God. But what did she see in him, you know?
Well, if it's the fucking Anthony Hopkins version, I don't really know.
In my brain, he's kind of handsome in my imagination.
Who would you... Okay, if you were recasting this.
Oh.
Like, who do you... like, who's... Do you have a kind of, like...
Yeah. What's his name?
Is it Leo Woodall from White Lotus?
No, but it could be. This is such a random, I don't know why this came to mind. I would cast Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I don't see that, but I would love it. I see him almost as like a Ray Fiennes. Like a young Ray Fiennes.
Okay, fine, whatever. I don't know why.
This is your experience. It could be Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay, it's just maybe I think he's kind of cute.
He's super cute.
And then I'd cast myself as Miss Kenton, of course.
And for Miss Kenton, I think Zaza Crame. No one can bring life to that role like you could.
I would slam the door in his, like she does many times.
You would stamp up behind him in a dark corridor.
Yeah, she's always stomping around.
She is like...
Mr. Stevens.
I dare say Mr. Stevens. Yeah, she's not very subtle.
No, she's not. And she says some kind of mean things to him later on.
That?
She says some jaw-dropping things.
She does a woman scorned. She is a woman fucking scorned. When she's like, my acquaintance and I are rather a large part of our conversations, Mr. Stevens. Like, just ripping the poor fucker.
We do impressions
apart,
of you. Like, I know. And he's like, oh, well, how interesting. I'm going back to my parlor.
And then I think there's another moment, like, after that scene where it might be the young Mr. Cardinal. It like said, like some fucking posho.
One of those guys
says something to him like, Stevens, you're quite all right. You seem quite disturbed. Like, but he was like, actions versus like the perception of other people is so interesting.
I know. Everyone's like, yeah, you're upset right now.
Bro, you're not okay.
Bro, go cry. Bro, like,
I think why he is so repressed though has a little something to do with this idea of like dignity and greatness, which he is fucking obsessed with.
He is
all
obsessed
he fucking talks about. And he first brings it up talking about this. He's talking about like what makes a great butler. Well, the question isn't greatness. The question is yada, yada, yada. And he eventually decides that what sets a great butler apart from a normal butler is dignity. And this question of dignity is returned to over and over and over and over again, in particular with this anecdote that his father is very bemused by. Which is also just so, like, efficient, effective writing, because you get so much about, like, Stevens and his father and how this man must have raised his son and how Stevens took that in as a child to see, like, oh, it's just very, very clean, very good. But this story about a butler in India who discovers that there is a tiger underneath a table, and the butler quietly comes out to the drawing room and informs his lord there's a situation in the drawing room. Dinner will be no later than 5 minutes. Give me 3 minutes to take care of this. He goes in, he shoots the tiger. He comes out and he says, quote, there will be no discernible traces of the recent occurrence by that time. And that seems to be the cornerstone of what dignity means to Stevens and his dad. Yes. What do you make of that? Like, what do you think that means?
That story, well, I was like, oh, poor tiger, first of all. And then, obviously, he's been raised with these ideals. And so much of his sticking to the ideals is also, like, a place of fear of actually, you know, amounting to anything. You know, he's like, no, my duty is to serve this person. Like, so you don't really have to put yourself out there.
That's super interesting.
And you're never vulnerable. And you're telling yourself because that's, like, that's what a proper butler does.
That's, you know? Really, really interesting. Yeah, like this idea that this is your place and your place is to serve. And if that's making yourself wildly uncomfortable for someone else, that's your place. But I like your concept of, like, but that also means that you don't have to rise. You don't have to, like, climb a ladder, which is also part and parcel of this kind of world that they're existing in, which had a very strict cultural societal hierarchy.
He thinks that he has, like, no place to have political opinions, and yet he still clearly dreams of having some kind of positive impact on the world and politics.
Exactly.
But he doesn't think we should all be able
to
vote.
He still very much so loves that hierarchy because it gives him access to it without him having to make the decision. That's also another piece of that shifting that I find with him. I guess this leads us into a bit of a discussion about Lord Darlington's nefarious behaviors. One of the differentiators for his era of butlers versus his father's era is that it's really important for him and his generation to serve men of high distinction or great ideals, furthering the progress of humanity.
Yeah.
Which, notably, he never says what that morality is. Like, it's always, it's very left. It's not talking about, like, helping the poor, ensuring literacy, ensuring peace. Like, it's just, like, moralism, which I don't know what the fuck that means.
It's definitely not helping the poor.
It's definitely, if it's helping anyone, it's helping the Nazis, as we learn.
Yeah, it might be helping Hitler.
It might be helping Hitler. Not a good look for Lord Darlington.
It's tough. Really bad. Bad press for Lord Darlington.
Really, really bad press for Lord Darlington.
Yeah. To me, Lord Darlington's just kind of pathetic. I don't know what you think. I feel like he is just kind of like, you know, he's so easily swayed. I don't think he's, like, malicious, but I think he's just kind of a fool.
I totally agree, which is what I think makes him such a good character. Like, it'd be so fucking boring if he was just, like, a Nazi. But even, like, you understand how he kind of falls into this circumstance where now he's, like, trying to bring the German Nazi ambassador to meet with the Prime Minister of England, which is he had a friend that he fought against, a German man in World War I, who was destroyed by the war. And Lord Darlington was so ashamed by how politically England treated Germany, which I'm not a history scholar, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see, like, it comes from a place of, like, empathy and nobility that he kind of, like, gets pulled into this line of political thinking.
Yeah, and gets, like, taken advantage of. And and there's the whole thing with, like, firing the Jewish housekeepers. Yeah. And Stevens just goes along with it, even though he objects to it. And Miss Kenton, you know, stands up against it, but, like, doesn't quit her job. And
what I loved about all those pieces playing together is it shows how like, these are real people, and oftentimes real people, like, I don't, not to belittle Nazism, but, like, it's, people make mistakes, everybody makes mistakes, everybody has those days. Miss Kenton, who is such strong, like, she's so passionate about it, and then the reality is, like, she's like, I have nowhere to go, I can't leave this job, it's the middle of the depression,
I can't quit my job.
And Lord Darlington, too, like, another sad scene is, like, when he asks for the girls to come back like a year later. Like he's like beaten down. He's like, oh, Stevens, did you ever find those two girls? Could you call them back? And Stevens is like, no.
No, like they're gone.
And then the way they describe Lord Darlington too, very briefly, like Stevens is talking to Miss Kenton at their final meeting in their old age, and he says something like, oh, he was so, by the end, you know, he never moved from his wheelchair in the drawing room. He was so stooped over, like he was just destroyed by his own, by what he had done, essentially.
And in all the scenes, like way back when, where like whenever he's like trying to bring something up with Stevens, he's always pretending to read a book, you know, and like he's just like, oh, I just thought of this, but it's all like a little performance.
Oh, Stevens, like, yeah, very Columbo.
Yeah.
Oh. One more thing.
Yeah.
Very good scenes of butlerism is when he is asked by Lord Darlington to give young Mr. Cardinal the talk.
The talk.
The talk, essentially, which young Mr. Cardinal fucks about every possible scene. He literally thinks that Stevens just wants to talk.
He's like, oh, you love the birds and the bees? Like, I love nature too.
Oh, I'm a fish man. I do have certainly such an impressive aquarium back home. You really must see it. Like, it's like...
Yeah. He never pulls that one off.
No, I don't think he ever does.
No. I was waiting. I was like, let's hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's hear what you got to say about this, Stevens.
I don't know if this is quite dark, but it's like, I wonder if... Did Stevens even know himself? Like, surely, yes, you know.
Yeah, like, I bet he's read a book
He
on
did
it,
read
like.
Those romances.
Yeah, the romances. That was touching.
I don't think he's ever been with a woman. Or a man.
He's definitely never been with a woman. But he wants it.
There's so many, like, ineffective men in this story. Lord Darlington, Stevens, decrepit old Mr. Stevens, Sr. Like, there's just a lot of, like...
Stevens at all stages.
Even Lord Darlington, like, isn't married. Doesn't have any kids.
I know. Same with Lord Faraday.
Yeah, Lord Faraday. Just, like...
Who likes to banter.
Love all the... Sorry, that is actually one of the saddest fucking things in the whole book. This man, Stevens, sitting up in his room, listening to the wireless, trying to study banter, like...
I know.
So sad.
And all the times he tries to banter, it's like, I literally, like, had to stop for a moment because I was so embarrassed just reading.
It's so cringe. Like, it's like the social...
I was like, ooh.
And he knows it, too. Like, he knows when, like, it doesn't hit and it doesn't land.
We've all been there. I've been there today. I have to banter professionally, so...
Mm. And how does it go?
It's kind of hit or miss. I would say I have less dignity than him.
Disagree.
Though. His dignity. I wouldn't shoot the tiger.
I don't think I'd shoot the tiger either.
I would say, let's all get out of here. There's a tiger.
Everyone, my life is worth as much as yours. Let's all go. But he thinks our dignity, which is just like utter service, is like so undignified. The scene I'm thinking about where Lord Darlington calls him into the study and those two other lords are trying to make a point about like that the little people.
And it's like just... They humiliate him.
They're asking him all these questions about the state of affairs in the world, and he can't answer. And that's the point, is that he can't, and he's not supposed to. And do you think he actually knew the answers?
I feel like, I bet, like, he just, I don't think he had, like, the courage or the confidence
because
to say, you know. But I'm sure he, like, has some amount of knowledge. Like, he's around it all the time.
That's exactly it. Like, because he says kind of immediately, like, all these lords are asking him these questions. And he's like, oh, I knew what was expected of me. I knew, like, what I needed, how I needed to answer, which is to look like an ignoramus.
On this topic, since we're there, like, when he visits that little village and there's the guy, Harry Smith, I think is his name. And he's like... big into, I guess, like, democracy, or, like, we should all have a voice. We should all be, like, learning about these issues and have a voice. And Stevens is like, what an idiot.
Like, exactly. It's like, what a dipshit.
Yeah, I know. He's like, that guy's so annoying. Like,
I really must retire now.
Yeah.
That's, like, it's weird because I feel like Harry's point almost, like, speaks to the two kind of conflicting parts of Stevens, which is that he, like, the duty to service and being a butler and the former era of this very restrictive hierarchical society is that, no, he, as a butler, should not have an opinion on this. This is for men of great honor and nobility and dignity. Whereas he's also been saying throughout the entire book that he and all other butlers and service people, I would assume in these houses, are so close to those discussions that it's like they would know as well as anybody else what's going on in the world.
Yeah, they're standing
there. Oh, there's just so much standing. and listening. I would love that job, yeah, to be honest. Well, I'm glad to hear that we're pro-democracy.
What can I say? I think we should all vote.
Controversial opinion, but get out the vote.
Democracy, thumbs up.
I want to talk about this idea of regret and remorse, because I think that's what makes the book so fucking sad, is that it's so...
Yes, that's when your heart breaks.
That's when your heart breaks. And it's because he's kind of, throughout this whole story, this motoring journey he's taking on his way to see Miss Kenton, he's kind of like touching and toying with this idea of remorse. Like, there are things that he's like recounting that like you would feel remorseful about, but he never quite says it. Like, not being with his father when his father was literally like two flights of stairs up when he died.
I was trying to research like if any of these lords were real, but I couldn't find any information on that. But then I like saw like the headline of someone's like analysis, which I didn't want to read other people's analysis because analyses, because I wanted to make my own. But I saw this headline and it was like Stevens was like, his life was destroyed by his own ideals or something like that. And I was like, oh yeah, well, that's a good way of putting it.
That's a really good way of putting it. Like that, and that is how I feel. Like, you have this idea that dignity is like a disacknowledgement of your own values or importance at the hands of serving, which then like kind of obliterated any emotional standing he could have had with anyone.
He can never be vulnerable. Never put himself first in any type of way. Never acknowledge his own wants.
Exactly. It's so sad. And you get these, see, this is like where I start to cry, is when he finally, he sees Miss Kenton. They're having this like kind of lovely tea while he's on his little holiday. And as he's driving there, there are two lines, quote, "When, with the benefit of hindsight, one begins to search one's past for such, quote, turning points, one is apt to start seeing them everywhere," which is very true. Like, it, like, there's almost something about, like, if you are looking back, you're gonna find places you fucked up. But then, a few pages later, quote, "There was surely nothing to indicate at the time that such evidently small incidents would render whole dreams forever irredeemable." Excuse me?
Yikes.
Whole dreams forever irredeemable.
He's kind of a drama queen, but
that's again men.
Yeah, men. But one of the moments, like the small moments that was like kind of heartbreaking or very heartbreaking, was when he reveals that like they stopped having their like cocoa every day. That he's like, "I don't think we can do that anymore," or whatever. And she's like,
"Yeah."
He just cuts it off. And she's like, "Could we not just do it sometimes?" And
he's like, "No." He just like refuses to let himself. Like, he's also the, there are also some moments of like cruelty towards her, which ends up just like backfiring on himself. Like that cocoa evening is one of them. She's like exhausted. She's pissed off because he's been like hanging around her for the past fucking decade and hasn't made a move. Which, like, the patience, saint of a woman, the patience offer.
God, I know. They've just both been yearning for 10 years. Like,
imagine that first night together.
God.
Firecrackers.
That would have been so crazy.
If they knew what to do, which we don't know if they did. But, she says, like, she snaps him. She's like, "I'm just really tired tonight." And he's like, "Okay, I didn't realize that these cocoa evenings were tiring you, so we won't have them anymore." And she's like, "No, wait, I like them." And he's like, "Nope, we're done. It's over." Like,
no, he's scared of how he feels. Reading this the first time, I thought there was a chance that they might end up together, because I'd never seen the movie. Yeah. The whole time I was like, please. And then of course,
And he's like doubly regretful. He's regretful about kind of letting Miss Kenton go. I thought there was a very interesting kind of throwaway line where he's asking her at their very last parting meeting if she's been happy. And it's really sad because she's like, "I wasn't at first." And then I just, like, she also, like, this idea of duty. She says something about, "I wasn't happy when I left Arlington Hall and married my husband at first. It took a while, but then and I still have days where I'm not happy, but, like, I have to be a good wife." And
yeah. And she's not happy because she's still thinking about Stevens.
And then she says something like,
"My God."
She says about like how she's left home 3 times.
Yeah,
like,
because of her love for our man here. Who
I think unrequited love is the best kind of love, bar like me and my literal husband. But
yeah, I know that's the most like painful and so poetic.
I think they just really understood each other. Like the cocoa evenings.
I know,
like,
they did. I know. It was beautiful.
It was really beautiful. Then he obviously has a lot of regrets about what happened with Lord Darlington, too. So he, looking back on it, and I think you see it most clearly with a scene that's quite recent to when the two Jewish maids are dismissed. And Lord Darlington asks Stevens to bring him back, and Stevens asks Miss Kenton. And he says something like, oh, I know that you were just as upset about the whole situation as I was. And she's like, you weren't upset at all. You're positively gleeful. And yeah. So there's this kind of like tiptoeing around what's been happening with Lord Darlington, which is that he's being used by Nazi power to essentially gain a foothold culturally, politically in England. Doesn't go well for him in the end. His godson ends up writing an article about what he's been doing, and it destroys him. Yeah. But this whole time that Stevens is talking about how important it is that he, as a butler, is central to the great hub of the great affairs of the world, and how he knows what's going on, and how it's his duty to serve a just moral. There's also a lot of talk about like finding a lord to serve who you like fully, wholeheartedly, morally back. And I think that's part of it too, is it's not just like, oh, I didn't know what was going on with this guy. He spends so much time talking about like, no, Lord Darlington like was, like there's a, like I could have gone anywhere kind of, but like I stayed with him because that was my feeling. And then in the end he comes around and he still tries to dismiss it, which I don't really know what he could have done to like stop Lord Darlington, but I think it's more, it's like almost smaller than that. It's like not about like stopping this Nazi officer from meeting with like the prime minister and the foreign affairs ambassador. It's more like this inner dignity of like, I could have done or said something and I didn't. And it doesn't matter if it would have changed anything, at least my own slate would have been clean.
Yeah. And you can, it's another one of those things where, you know, what he's telling us is different than what we see in terms of how he feels. Like, he's like, Lord Darlington, he was great, you know? And then when he's motoring and someone asks him, like, oh, did you ever know that Lord Darlington? He's like, nope, I started working there after he left. Like, you can tell he actually is, like, ashamed, you know?
Totally. And there's that whole scene in the house with Lord, or Mr. Faraday, too, where the American woman is like, oh, haven't you been here since, like, the dawn of time? And he's like, no.
Just my first day today, actually.
Aren't I so good?
No. Lord who? Darlington?
Don't ring a bell, me love. Don't ring a bell.
Lord Faraday's kind of, he's good crack.
He's great crack. He's always taking the piss, having the bants.
He's taking the piss. You know who's not?
Stevens is not taking the piss.
He's bad crack.
Boo, bad crack.
Boo. He's like some of the worst crack ever.
It's like, when he fucking this dry shite and he's having a fucking pint, he goes, I decided to go into town and have a glass of the local cider. It's like, ugh, come on.
God, I know. Have a whiskey for God's sake.
You're on holiday.
He seems like someone like one of my friends would date and like bring to like a social thing, and we'd be like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, great.
Oh, Stevens, you like
is
him?
Coming out? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Although he sounds like a man to bring a really good tray of refreshments.
Good old Stevens.
Then I guess to wrap up the discussion about the book proper, the final thing, the ending is quite ambiguous, I feel. So, yeah.
It is, but here's my takeaway from the ending.
Let's hear it.
I'm going to even open. So one of the pages I bookmarked. Actually, I didn't bookmark it because it's the last page. Okay. So I didn't feel like
I'll
I needed
open mine
to.
Up too.
What he's learned at the end is that the thing that matters most of all is human connection.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Yes. But I kind of like, I almost thought it was a little on the nose. That's when he was like, it is the case that in bantering lies the key to human warmth.
That is a beautiful line.
I was like, okay, well.
Do you think,
beautiful.
Though? This is why I think it's ambiguous, though. Because he's ultimately going back to serve. Like, I don't know if he's going back to like, like, it occurs to me furthermore that bantering is hardly an unreasonable duty for an employer to expect a professional to perform. Like, I think that's almost where it, like, and I agree totally. Like, I love that reading of like he's yeah he that's the connection to human warmth. He sees these people on the pier behind
this
him.
This is what it was all about
all along. Yeah, and then at the end, I just get this taste that it's like it's my excuse for human connection is my job. Like that's the only way I can access yeah. it. I don't know.
I think he's learned a lesson.
Yes, definitely.
But it is kind of too late.
Yeah. Like,
he can't change the course of how things have gone.
Exactly.
And, like, what could he do? Like, and, you know, go become a teacher. Like, you know, he has nothing else to do. He has to come back to work. He has no assets.
Yeah, it's like you were just sending me screenshots from Tinder from a man who didn't understand what this book was about.
Yeah. Yeah, he's still in the roster.
Hey, we can all learn. Like Stevens.
Fair enough. There's no hope for him, but he could stick around for...
Well, don't worry. This won't be out for another like month and a half, so we can keep it in.
He would never listen to it.
If I knew anyone, I would immediately listen to anything anyone I was remotely interested in was on.
No,
why
me
are
too.
Boys like, stalky?
I would love.
What's wrong with them?
I know they're missing out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that I might not be stalked. Yeah. Well, until I see it back, well I do. But.
There's Yeah. There's some podcast I was listening to, and this girl was talking about, like, checking in on her people every day. And she's like, they're just girls I follow that I just, like to check in on. Like, I like to see what they're doing. Like,
I know.
Maybe they're, like, ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends. Maybe they're, like, girls who work at a coffee shop I go to. And I'm like, yeah, I totally get that.
I know. If I look at someone's Instagram and they have, like, their Substack in their bio, and I've, like, met this person once, I'm reading, like, four
Absolutely.
Of their posts.
I have found people's Tumblrs before.
I would... not want someone
maybe
to
I'd be
that.
A good Stevens actually getting to the heart of the great affairs of the world. Girls talking about their boyfriends.
You could be
yeah. Anything else you want to say about this book?
Anyway, I don't have a boyfriend.
Yeah, besides the fact that you don't have a boyfriend, she's single, folks.
Yeah, so
just saying,
located in Dublin, Ireland. Yeah, at the moment. But
Morris, in fairness, I can cut this out. Morris was like, I was telling him that I was going to be talking to you, and he was like, is she seeing anyone? I said, no. And he goes, do we know anyone who's single? And I was like, I literally actually don't know a single man in Dublin.
Hey, where's
actually, he was here in this very house. Like,
no
yeah,
way.
He, his, like, and his, and he was like, and for work. And he was flying out to see him. He was like, oh, can we stop by? And like, so we had dinner.
Wow. We could never come back from the time that me, him, and we're all sitting around the table at your birthday party.
That's big Miss Kenton energy out of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's big Stevens energy out of him. To a out of in the middle.
I know. God, I know. What a weird series of
exactly.
months.
Exactly. That was a
that
weird
was.
Series of months. Maybe I'll just bleep all of this.
Never. Yeah, I like it when I have a podcast I listen to and they always, because they went to like high school together, they always talk about people from high school and they bleep
I'm
out their
doing
names.
That. I think I will.
You should, yeah.
Anything else you want to say about this book before we close it out?
I'm sure there's something.
Okay.
Give me 30 seconds to think. Wait, I'll look at my notes for the first time.
Look at your notey-oties.
I wrote, I just have all by itself at the bottom of the page, what is worth doing with our lives? Question mark. Which I don't even know if that is a coherent Ooh. Phrase.
Yikes, man. Okay. Maybe you shouldn't read this book anymore. Okay, maybe this was it for you. Well,
we covered it.
What is worth doing for
Go
you
on.
In your life, would
okay.
you say?
I don't know, serving. Just like
good answer.
Just like Stevens.
Good answer.
No, what is worth doing?
If I had to say on this book what lesson it's trying to tell me about what's worth doing
yeah.
is I think you are right. Like the end is like human connection. Having a bit of crack.
Yeah. I'd say like just let them know how yeah. you feel.
Yes.
You know. Let it out. Take off, you know the line that's like, dignity is like not taking off your
yes.
clothes in public. My advice would be take off your clothes in public.
This is a formal announcement to say that like after this discussion, if anyone listening wants to confess their love for either me or Zaza, like you're welcome to. It's important to get that those feelings out.
Yeah, but like it would be, you know, you have a better shot
True.
With me.
True.
Zoe's married.
I'll put on mail forwarding for all my love confessions to you.
Yeah, just have them do like dear Z.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all they need
just
to
say Z, and we're all good. Maybe I'll open up an anonymous question box on Instagram and see if a tip line. See if anyone does a love confession after this episode.
Yeah, I'd relocate.
I would love you to relocate here. For the right offer.
Okay, well, find me the right man. Yeah. Then we can go on double dates.
I know. I would actually never put anyone through dating a Colorado man. That would be wrong. That would be a moral wrong, to be honest with you. No offense.
I'm feeling the same way about Dublin men at the moment. So.
Yeah, they're very... Yeah, is it just men?
Could it be? Could it be also British men?
It's for sure British men.
Yeah.
To wrap up, I like to ask any recommendations. You've recommended us your favorite book throughout the whole of this discussion. Anything else that you can recommend? Books, movies, food, whatever. Whatever is coming to your mind that you'd like to share.
Okay. I've been really into Baobabs lately.
You must live in Dublin.
I must, because they've gotten me into Baobabs. And then I feel like I've seen a good movie lately.
Was it Poor Things?
That was a good movie.
Was it?
Wait, dare I look at my Letterboxd?
Yes.
While I'm on the pod. Okay.
Box the pod.
I really liked The Holdovers.
Oh, I loved The Holdovers. Have you heard my Alexander Payne story? I'm sure you have.
Yeah. Do you know him, right?
No.
Met him.
One.
Didn't Alexander Payne flirt with you? Confirm or deny?
He said I was hot. He didn't even say I was hot. He asked who I was.
Didn't?
No comment. Sorry. No comment. That's big Stephen's behavior of me. I'm extremely attributing a lot of information, emotional weight to one interaction that I didn't even really have. Huge Stephen's energy.
Oh, I do have one more thing I want to say about the book. Do you know what I thought was interesting? How twice he said, you and I.
Yes.
And it was me? Are you talking to me? Because it came out of the blue each time. And I like how we're just normal people like him. He's speaking to someone also in that same rank as him when he's telling this story.
He really is. Yeah. It's almost and the only person, to be honest, that I can kind of see at that same rank out of the characters we know is Miss Kenton. I don't think he is talking to Miss Kenton, obviously, because he references her extensively in third person. But
because he's obsessed with her and
talking about her.
He's stalking her podcast for research.
He's sending her a love confession. Absolutely not. I don't think you could do that.
If only. No. If only you would. 20 years ago.
Write her a little message, pass it to one of the maids. Do you like me? Yes or no?
Yeah. Love you. Circle here. Meet me in the parlor. Yeah. Or the pantry.
I did think that was interesting. He goes, the likes of you and I could not understand, yada, yada, yada. The other one that I thought was interesting writing-wise was there's a couple of moments where he's getting really close to touching something emotional when talking about Miss Kenton, when it's he's talking about regrets, when he's talking about something about her being a friend or their conversations, and he stops referring to himself in first person and starts using a third person. So he says one doesn't know when one's cocoa evenings with Miss Kenton are going to end, and it's there's something so he can't
it ends when you end them, but...
he can't touch it, or see it as himself, which is so sad. Yeah,
I know. It is. It's heartbreaking.
So,
men, get in touch with your feelings. Go to therapy.
Anyway, Zaza Crame. Love you to absolute bits and bits and bits.
Oh, it's a podcast, so I shouldn't make hand signals. Okay.
She gave me a heart. I did a heart. Fuck you. Promise. Love you. Thank you so much for joining. And if you read anything else good ever, we'll have you back.
Oh, great. I hope to.
Excellent. And in the meantime, everybody go eat a bao bun, watch The Holdovers, and don't forget to subscribe to A Penny for Zaza's Thoughts.substack.com, which I'll link in the bio. But love you to bits, and we'll chat soon. Thank you, Zaza, and to anyone who knows whose name we were bleeping that entire episode, keep it to yourself. Such a great conversation. We'll definitely have to get Zaza back here on the Podiati in the future to talk a little bit more about some of her other favorite books, because I think we have some more shared favy gravies. With that said, thank you so much for listening this week. As always, do me a solid, give us those 5 stars, reviewing and sharing. And if you just can't get enough Broken Spine bookish content, make sure to follow us over on at Broken Spine SC on Instagram. I'm always posting kind of fun little bookish bits there. And yeah, we appreciate the follow, the share, and the support. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place, for more book stuff. In the meantime, I hope you keep reading whatever keeps the pages turning.